Javon Show. I am Javon. Today's show is a special show because we're talking about love, we're talking about marriage, and we're talking about divorce. We're coming up on Valentine's Day. Valentine's Day weekend is when we're going to be showcasing this. And I needed people to come in and help me understand why sometimes love makes you weak. And I can't explain it. You saw in that pre-show. I can't explain it. I'm still trying to find the right notes to hit and the right rhythm to do it in. But even though I can't explain it, I have people that can explain it. So we have an amazing show today. But this is what I need you to do. I need you to right now like the show. And then once you realize that that wasn't good enough, I need you to go ahead and love today's show. Put some love on it. So love today's show and then share it. Because why would you hold this to yourself? You're about to get relationship advice, marriage advice, divorce advice. Well, you know, love, marriage, and I'll give you the divorce advice. But expert. But even though I can't explain it, I have people that can explain it. So we have an amazing show today. The first couple I'm about to bring in are the Westbrooks. And just so you know, you're paying $100 if you call them the Brooks. So Pastor and Pastor Westbrook, good morning this morning.
Good morning.
How are y'all doing?
Doing well, doing well. Ooh. After hearing that gal sing, yeah, we much better.
Absolutely.
You held it. Look, I love how you threw that thing at the camera, though. That was next level. That throwback was next level.
Yeah.
Her singing and the way I throw a grape, those are the compliments that we're going with this morning.
Wonderful.
Absolutely.
Can't nobody throw a grape like you, brother.
There is. That guy right there I can have on my team all day long. I see why you married him, Pastor Brooks. He's a teammate.
Ching ching. Ching ching. You said Brooks.
Huh? I said Brooks.
Yes.
No. We got to bring the film back.
I'll probably be back.
Boy, there's $100 going on already. And that's why we're going to stop calling names this morning. So we also have Pastor and Lady Akins on the show today. It's going to be $100 every time I call them the Westbrooks. Good morning, Pastor and Lady Akins. How are y'all doing this morning?
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Well, thank you.
It's all of these smiling couples and beautiful, happy couples and Javon. So I'm going to just not be any way about this on Valentine's weekend. Let me ask this question to begin with. Both couples, are you in love, starting with the Westbrooks?
Are we in love?
We're absolutely in love.
Absolutely in love.
Excellent.
And we're more committed to the act of love.
Yeah.
Because love has its ebbs and flows.
Mm-hmm.
Love is more than a feeling. It's about commitment.
Yeah.
Oh, so, I like that. We're going to dive into that one a lot more.
Yeah.
Let me ask the Akins real quick. Akins family, it's okay. It's only, you know, going to be 100,000 people watching this. Akins family, are you here to pronounce anything today or are you in love?
We are definitely in love. We're not pronouncing anything else.
But love.
Okay, I had to make sure that y'all looked at each other before you answered. I like that. You know, make sure y'all got on one accord first. Are we in love, baby? What's your answer, baby? I like that. That's good that y'all did that.
Well, let me say that the look was for a reason. Because we have come to surmise that love is education more than it is being in love. The more I know about you, the more I'm in love with you. And that's what oftentimes where people mishap it. So in love, it's like, I found some stuff out about you. Now I don't love you, right? So that's what we had to look. We said, yeah, we educated.
We educated. I love this. Now, people need to get a little bit of background. So I'm going to ask the Westbrooks, or I'm going to be emphasizing the West on this Westbrooks throughout this entire show. The Westbrooks, can you let us know who you are, where you're from, and a little bit about your ministry before we get going this morning?
Okay. The Westbrooks, we are what we call what happens when two go-getters get together.
Mm. Yeah.
The Westbrooks are creative people. We're going to birth some things, create some things, as we'll get to it back when we talk about our church a little bit more. Not only are we creative people, but we are courageous people. When we launch, most of the things that we've started and launched, we've done so without momentum, money, mentorship, or any type of external support. These are things that we just felt like God had an oil on us about, and we had the courage enough to jump out there and go get those things. Something about our ministry. We started our church, a little church called Redemption Church, yeah, right here in Memphis, the most dope and doctrinal church in this region.
Absolutely.
And we started that church again with no money, no mentorship, no members, no momentum.
Right.
All we had was a go from God. And we're celebrating. We're going. January will be 10 years, one decade of doing Ground Zero ministry.
Mm-hmm.
So we're excited about what God is doing with our ministry and so forth and so on.
Yeah, so we've been married for 16 years. We have 5 awesome children. We are newly grandparents. We are entrepreneurs, not only entrepreneurs, but we are knowledgepreneurs. And we're the founders of Marriage Maintenance. It's hard to sustain what you rarely maintain. So welcome to Westbrooks and Marriage Maintenance with the Westbrooks.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. I am so excited about today's show. We're going to be covering so much stuff, and it is great to have such knowledgeable and energetic and passionate people on the show. Akins, family, I cannot wait to hear you all's story. So please share with our listeners and our viewers, who are the Akins?
Well, we are the pastors, lead pastors of Triumphant Life Church in Oceanport, New Jersey. And we started about, I guess it's been like 18 years now.
Wow.
And in ministry, yeah. And so we started in a small church in Asbury Park, New Jersey, with just a handful of people. And then we now own 2 locations, and we're in Oceanport, where God is just doing some amazing things. But we are, just like the Westbrooks, we are like entrepreneurs. We've been blazing a trail in business, but also within our community. And we're grateful to God. I'm also the author of several books, but one in particular, The Relationship Blueprint, which launched out of our brand called Relationship University,
yeah,
where we educate people on relationship matters and how to get to the next level. And we like to help married couples or those who are trying to get married really understand and break the curse, the lie, the tale that people have kind of said about marriage, that marriage could be really awesome if you work it. So
we've been married for 23 years. It'd be 24 years in June. We have 2 biological children and an adopted son. And so we absolutely love being married. We love sharing our story with other people. You know, we don't fake like marriage is easy. It is work. But right, if you put in the work, the benefits are amazing. And so that's who we are.
Fantastic. Fantastic. I'm going to start with the Westbrooks first. Westbrooks. Why did y'all get married?
Ooh.
Wow. Why did we get married? Oh, wow. Okay, so.
Yeah, that's what I did. I did that.
When we got married, we decided to get married because I think that was something enigmatic about us. You know, I've always been, I thought I would always do well by myself. I really wasn't high on marriage much, to be honest. I didn't think I would get married. Certainly didn't want to be married. But we were friends. We met at church. We were in a choir together. And when I first saw her, I was like, yo, who is that? And my friends were like, oh, that's Samantha. I'm like, okay, what's up with her? And I'm like, go get her. So I go up and run my thing and got the digits, called her the next day, and her mom let me have it. I'm like, ooh. She let me have it. Gave me some Sunday school words and told me, man, don't call my daughter no more. You know, she's 13. I was like, 13? I was 19. And so, yeah, but we legit went on about our business. We never said anything to each other again.
He did.
She went on to get married. I got married.
Yep.
I got divorced. Then she asked me a question about divorce. I said, if you ask me anything about divorce, that means you ain't ready for it. She, I guess, went on, did her thing, she got on up getting divorced about a year or so later.
Mm-hmm.
And we were still singing in the same church choir again. Never crossed any inappropriate boundaries. Mm-hmm. And one day she was getting ready to go on a date or something at the choir rehearsal.
Yeah.
And we used to always get together at the choir rehearsal. We had a pretty good choir. Got together at the choir rehearsal, and she was getting ready to go on a date. And I found myself getting jealous. And I was like, oh man, you can't be telling me that and I fell for this girl, right? So I already said I didn't want to be married. Now I'm coming out of one and interested in somebody else. I was like, no, I ain't trying to go down this route. But it was something about her that I instantly knew. I'm talking about when we first started kind of dating, I knew I wanted to marry her. I really can't tell you what it was. I just knew she fit me and understood me. A guy, here's this guy with all this potential, but she had plans to my potential. Mm. And I begin to see not just a life with her, I begin to see destiny with her. And I knew, and then God was shifting me in the ministry at that point in my life. And so I knew my life was maturing and I saw destiny with her. And once we really began to confirm those things, not only did I see destiny with her, I saw a life of ministry with her. So even like she can't leave right now if she wanted to. Like, our lives are too tied together. Like, ain't nobody out there as good as me for you. Nobody out there as good as me for you. And so
I love that.
She spiritually fits me. She emotionally fits me. She psychologically fits me. In every way, she fits me. I would be okay, but she makes me better.
Mm, that's beautiful. Beautiful. Lady Akins, why did you marry Pastor Akins?
That's so loaded. You know that, right?
Yeah.
Right. So he is cheesing like so hard right now. I don't even have to look at him. So we were best friends for 10 years. You know, we both dated other people. I swore I was going to marry somebody else. But this is who I hung out with. I'm 3 years older than him. So he always tried to call me his sugar mama, whatever. Literally, I had moved back to New Jersey from Virginia and we were sitting talking and the Lord literally said, he is the one. And I literally said, hey, I got to go. I'll talk to you later. And I jumped up and left. I went home. I was actually dating a millionaire. So in my mind, I was like, Lord, you got to be losing it because he lived at home with his mama and he worked for the bishop. But, you know, I'm about to get a house built. Working is an option. Are you serious? But I went home, I prayed, and the Lord showed me that my destiny was tied to him. So literally, I broke it off. The same time that I was breaking it off with the guy that I was dating, he called and he wasn't dating his ex, but you know how you still got them strings attached? And so he was like, listen, I've severed all ties. And we literally, I had moved home in June. We were engaged in August and we were married the next June because we understood that our destinies were tied together and no one could be better for each other. And so I married him because the Lord literally said he is the one. And I absolutely, absolutely love him.
Aww. Well, I need to put a kind of like a comma in there, because what she left out is the important part of it is that I told her she was mine. She left out an important part that success is not an event, it's a decision. And so I said to her in those young years, I said, listen, I believe our success is predicated upon our connection. And with that, we are in history right now.
Come on. You had to throw that in there, y'all.
That is beautiful. That is beautiful. Let me go ahead and tell my story about why I'm single and divorced. Story's not nearly as good as you all's. I was married, and we realized that we didn't like each other like that no more. And so we got divorced, and now I'm single because I'm busy. The Westbrooks. That's my story. That was a phenomenal story. Pastor Samantha, when you saw him and you know you were going through your divorce, was there a moment where you said, no, I'm going to stick through this because I'm invested in it. So I'm going to stay in this marriage. I am not under no circumstances getting a divorce. And what cost you to change your mind? And I'm going to ask real questions now. Now that I know I've got two real couples on here that will be willing to share and really get into the conversation, I want to know. So I got divorced because we didn't like each other no more. Why did you This what was there a point where you wanted to stay married, where you decided I'm going to stay married, and now you know what, I'm going to go ahead and get this divorce, and why? I'm going to start with Pastor Samantha.
Okay, so for me, I was really really young, and I was not anybody's wife at that time. And he definitely was not my husband. I don't play the blame game because I'm just as much to blame for that first marriage. I was young. I really was a kid. I didn't know who I was at all. So it really wasn't a time where, like, people talk about grief from a divorce. I didn't experience that. It was more like, woo, a relief more so than grief. So I never thought about staying. I wanted to because we did have a daughter, maybe a little bit, but that just was not enough to keep us together. So for me, I think that, and we teach this, I teach this to women now, you have to know who you are. I didn't know who I was or what I wanted. I was super young, like young, 21, 22 maybe. So I was not ready to be married, was not prepared, and he was not my husband. I was not his wife. So it was not easy, but it was smooth for me to get a divorce. I was kind of like you. We didn't like each other. We were not compatible. It just wasn't that. You know, back in the day, the church used to teach you, you know, it's better to marry than to burn. But they don't teach you, hey, you need to pray, be with the one who God has ordained and predestined for your life, though. It's two-sided. Although it's better to marry than to burn, it's true, it's accurate, it's incomplete.
But I guess I'm my question comes in, though. Okay, so you were married to the man, and you were like, you know, I just don't like him no more either. Mm-hmm. What feels different now being married to Pastor Westbrooks?
Ooh, Jesus.
Didn't feel then.
Okay, when we started, I feel like I found love. Okay. I knew God showed me like our purpose was tied together, our destiny, our lives, our future was tied together. So I could feel God telling me like he is the one and you are the one for him. And I'm going to produce something magical. I'm going to produce something great and impactful. That's not just going to impact y'all, but you're going to be impactful for other people. Like seriously, I did not know love before we started dating. I really didn't. I was a spoiled girl, came from a well-to-do family. I never had even fixed a man's plate before. Didn't know how to cook. Because I thought, you know, it was just all about me. I deserve to be catered. I'm the prize, which I still believe that. But relationships should be reciprocal.
Mm-hmm. And Pastor Westbrooks, yeah, I want to get the same question to you.
Once she saw this killer smile, it was
that was over. It.
It was it. It was, I mean, it's hard to resist it.
Mm-hmm. Like, seriously, I did know love. I really did not know love or how to love or even how to be loved. I was young.
I get it. Pastor Westbrook, I know what it's like to have a smile that just brings them in and there's like nothing you can do about it. You smile and it just, bam, it's there and it's undeniable. Yeah. But you were married before as well. And yeah. Really the same question for you. You were married. You were in this marriage. At one point, you loved her enough to get married to her and then you didn't like her to where you get, or what the situation happened where you need to get out of it. What makes this marriage that you're with right now with the dope Pastor Samantha different than before, to where if that same type of situation happens, you know you're in it for life, as before you were like, no, we got to get out of this. I got to go.
Well, number one, when I was being young myself, growing up without a father, growing up without a father being there, that my first marriage was really a response to that. Like I've impregnated this young woman. And I want to, quote unquote, do right by her, right? I want to do right by her, or what they say, make an honest woman out of her. And I want to be present because my father was not present. And I thought marriage was being present. What I didn't understand was, I didn't understand about being yoked, equally yoked. I didn't understand
That's
compatibility.
Good.
I didn't understand what it meant to be in service to one another. I didn't understand what destiny and being connected to the right somebody was all about. And when I began to understand those things, well, first I understood that we weren't compatible first. Then I began to search for compatibility. And much like she said, when we first started dating, God showed me instantly compatibility. He showed me instantly destiny. He showed me instantly that we're tied together. And so we began to eradicate. Once we began to matriculate through marriage, we eradicated the word divorce from our vocabulary because divorce is not an option. Mm-hmm. We had to find destiny. We had to figure out destiny together.
Right.
And we both believe that we're very intelligent people. So we're going to have to figure this out.
Right.
There is no divorcing. We're going to have to figure this out. Come hell or high water, come mad or not mad, we're going to have to figure this out because you ain't going nowhere and I'm not going nowhere either.
Wow. That's good. That's good work. We're going to, every time you all open up your mouths, I have 15 more questions to provide, but I got to bring in the Akins because there's a question that's burning inside of me. And I'm going to ask the Akins because this is a real show. Pastor Akins, she came from a millionaire, dog. A millionaire, not a thousandaire, dog. Not a hundredaire. She came from a millionaire. What is that feeling like knowing that you were coming, that she was coming from that type of situation to you? Was there added pressure? Was there, you know what? Well, I'm not even going to give you answers. I need to hear from you. Please break it down so that I know.
All right, I'm going to put some real detail and icing to that storyline because the person that she was dating was a person that him and I were good friends. And I said I was going to be real and put some ice cream on it and icing. Not only were we good friends, we both said if there was someone to marry, we were in conversation. We hung out together. And we said if there was someone to marry, we both called on her name. And
I didn't know that.
She didn't know this detail. And we said, well, I said to her, well, she's going to marry me, so you don't need him. He said, well, we'll see who has that opportunity. And he started flying down there. I had just graduated college, and I was like, okay. He was telling me he was flying there. She was talking to him. I was like, oh, what's going on? Wait, I'm losing. And I said, you know, it's all right. You know, I understand what she was called to, and that's real. Because I was also 2 years celibate praying and asking God for who, at the same time, going back, trying to date through all of the women I left to try to figure out if they were the one, and none of them were. And God said to me, I already told you who the one was. So when God gives you a really assignment, when he says something to you, money does not match what God puts in the lineup. When God says it, it's like, okay, God, you said it. So I literally just picked up the phone and called her. So here's the details of that. When she was dating him, I called her and said, hey, what did God say about the situation you're in? She came over. I looked her in the face. I said, what did God say? Go home and ask God. She went home. And that's where the storyline, the detail picks up where she said God spoke to her. And so to answer your question, you don't have to match money when you have the mindset that God did something. So money does not match what God does. And I had that rest, that assurance of that. And I just rested on that laurels. And here we are in the storyline of life. And we are good friends with that individual to this day because he understood the greater picture of God. He cooks for our church at times. He does amazing things, donates. And that relationship has not been soured, I should say, at all. But when God does something, money don't match it.
If I was
around, don't get it twisted. He would still walk around home and be like, I won. So don't, you know, but he's right. Our relationship with him is still amazing. He respects it, you know, and he said to me, thank you for doing what God called you to do.
So me and Nikki are both mouths dropped right now. So I could call up Beyonce and say, Beyonce, God told me that Jay-Z wasn't the one for you. You need to come through and live in this apartment, this one-bedroom apartment with me and Urban. I could say that. But it, Pastor, Lady Akins, what made you believe it, though?
You know what? Because, one, I'm Holy Ghost filled. And my desire was to please God. At that time, I was already on a fast. And I don't proclaim to be oh so deep, but I was on a fast. And I really wanted God. And I really wanted to walk in his will. And so when you are submissive to the voice of God, sometimes you don't always know what he's going to do, but you do what he says do. So listen, even when I was breaking up with a guy. Now, let me say, I never wanted to be a pastor. I never wanted to be married to a pastor. I never wanted to be a pastor's wife. Like, I had already told God those things, and right? Me. And when I broke up with him, I said, I know what I'm called to do. You're not called to walk on that journey with me. Now, you know, only the Holy Ghost is speaking, because I was like, Lord, I don't even know the whole picture. He wasn't a pastor at the time, you know, and so I literally just wanted to please God, period. That was it. Now, we were best friends for 10 years, so there was already some affection there towards each other. You know, we weren't crossing the lines. We respected each other's relationships. We respected our friendship. But listen, even when I started dating that other guy, I had the nerve to call him and be like, yo, Dale, what you think? You know, I'm gonna go out on a date with him. And he was like, okay, cool. Now, what he's not telling you is how he called me and was like, yeah, I think you have everything you need in him. And so this friendship's over on Valentine's Day.
Wow.
With was the guy. Yes, it was. And the guy was in the other room and I'm in the bathroom crying over a friendship. And so when that happened,
some head games. Some head games you gotta play.
You know what?
I see.
Get it out.
I'm taking all the notes and gonna replay this and put it into a master class. Please, I'm sorry, Agnes. Please keep going.
It's okay. So, but when I did move home and I had those conversations, and I heard the Lord speak to me, I wanted to be obedient, and I haven't looked back since.
That is absolutely beautiful. But is there a little bit of ego, Lady Akins, where you like, where he may say something to you, or you don't like something he's saying, be like, well, you know, I could have been.
You know what? We've never had that happen. I've never thrown that in his face at all, because it even wasn't a thought. Like, I know.
Because your knees were met.
Mm. What are you
want me to say? Because my knees were met. Where's my Lord?
Running over.
But it really never has been a thought. I mean, we would go to the restaurant, we talk to them, and if you didn't know our story, you would never know. You know, even when he's catered, because he's a chef, he's catered things for us. It's never been that awkward feeling. It's like, yo, we good. And I never look back. You know, I don't want to be like Lot's wife.
Mm.
Okay. So yeah, you keep moving forward. That's what was.
Right.
This is what is and is to come.
Amen. I'm going to ask each of you the next question, and then I'm just one by one, starting with the Westbrooks into the Akins family. Yes, not East. Westbrooks. We'll make sure that we put that on there. I don't know why my brain wants to. And even right then, I still wanted to say Brooks, like as if I got the money to pay for. Here's my question. So once you decided that marriage was going to be what I'm going to do with this individual, what were the steps that you took for yourself to get yourself prepared for this marriage? And I'm coming with the Westbrooks first, as someone who was married, divorced, about to get married again. What did you do for yourself to get yourself prepared to make sure that this was going to be a lifelong commitment? And then Akins family, again, like you were saying, you know, God sent me this person. I know that this is the person for me. What did you do internally to prepare yourself for marriage? Starting with the Westbrooks and then into the Akins.
For me, I had to first acknowledge and come to a clear understanding that I did not know how to be a wife. And as far as my family background, is filled with entrepreneurs, filled with creative people, very highly successful people, but divorce is a deep part of the DNA of my family on both sides. So I did not have a role model, a tangible role model, like this is how a wife's supposed to act. This is what a wife's supposed to do. So Holy Spirit literally had to teach me how to be a wife, but I had to first acknowledge that I needed the help. Like, God, you have to show me, because I don't know what I'm doing at all. I love this man. You know, I'm in love with this man. I want this marriage to work. I know you called us together, but I don't know what to do. So I had to do some self-reflecting. I had to get in his face, like, for real, show me how to be a wife. And he did just that. So that's the very first thing I acknowledged. I ain't know what in the world I was doing. I knew how to get degrees. I knew how to make money. I didn't know how to be a wife. And so after I acknowledged that and submitted myself to God first in that area specifically, that's when, you know, things began to shift for us.
For me, God took me on a personal 7-month seminary. Literally, it was one. I remember one conversation. He very, very seldom does he speak audibly to me. But this one time he told me, listen, you're not moving. You're not taking another step until you go through this entire Bible. I was like, what? Like, yeah, you reading this whole book. And it wasn't really about, I think that was the first thing for me in terms of dedicating. I had to dedicate myself to what I heard God say. And I began to spend time with him. And I think he was pulling me into ministry, confirming ministry for me, because I wasn't preaching prior to that. He was pulling me into ministry. I knew that there was a higher calling on my life. So the first thing he did maybe a year or so before we started dating, is he called me to a higher level of living. I thought that was a call to preaching, but he's like, no, I just need you to live different. And during this 7 months, it was just, I would wake up and go to sleep to God. I would wake up and go to sleep to God. I was transitioning from the military at the time. And so they didn't really have me doing a lot of duties. I would wake up in the morning, read, go to PT, come back, and I would sit in my room and just study, just read and study. And after I finished reading the Bible, I would go to the library and just pick up books, Miles Monroe, Joel Osteen. Just, I was consuming everything I could, and I'm hearing God speak so crazy during those times. And I was dedicated to that voice and dedicated to that moment. And God was just kind of ironing some things out for me, because if I was going to be in this relationship, I could not be anything like I was in my prior relationship. My prior relationship, it was all about me, completely selfish. What I want out of it, what I want to do in it, what I want to be around it. And in this relationship, God was doing something on the inside of me that was allowing me to be a better person for her, because she has too much in her for me to just allow her to be my wife. I know I have to find how I'm going to support her. I have to find ways to. I would tell like, ain't no, she's not, she can't be just no first lady with sitting with a little pretty hat and a couple of people behind around her. No. She has so much more in her. And I had to be secure within myself, because she's going to garner more attention than I do. She is an instant firecracker. I'm more subdued. And so I had to be internally, spiritually secure enough to be able to handle being her husband.
And God has such a sense of humor. I just want to add this, is that I am my dad is a pastor. Both my grandfathers were pastors. I used to pray as a little girl that I never marry a pastor. I was the oldest of five girls, so I was like my dad's boy. I was in the pastor study. As a young girl, I wanted him to love God, but did not want him to preach. So God didn't call him to preach till after we got married. How about that?
I think it's fantastic that both lady and pastor were saying how they did not want to be first ladies and weren't planning on being pastors. So this is for the women that have been praying to be a first lady or to be a pastor. My name is Javon Martin, and I guarantee that there is absolutely no chance at all. So if you're looking for a pastor, you may be finding me. I just want to put that out there. Akins family, back to you all now. The same question. What did you do to prepare yourself for marriage?
It's funny because I'm listening to their story and I'm going, oh my God. I literally had to go through and cut off all these women that I was connected to, so to prepare myself for marriage. I mean, that was the preamble of it. And then there was some spiritual. I took a 2-year, vow of celibacy after I cut everybody off. But the preparation was, I know what I did not want to be. And so I had to make a decision to develop myself to be who I wanted to be in this marriage, in this relationship. I have my history, and she knows it. I was a polygamist, I had multiple relationships. That was like normal, and they all knew about it. I was not one of those ones that was secretive. I would say, "Hey, I want you to meet so and so. That we're in a relationship, and we want you to join the process." And so I had to really make a mental shift to prepare myself for marriage, to say, hey, this is what God wants. This is the design. And I had to personally shift and ask God to help me through that shift process.
Yeah, that's how he was.
Thank you for confirmation.
I'm just saying. And I was friends with him. So, you know, there was a standard that I set. So, like, his friends would be over. I'd be like, yeah, I'll talk to you later. That ain't my life. I ain't down with you. Love you as a friend, but I'm going home. So, for me, I had to, one, walk in the fact that he was not my ex. Just a millionaire, but I dated someone else for 7 years before that. You know, and that he was not my ex. He was not going to be and treat me like my ex. So there was some other personal healing that I had to do, as well as in my family. You know, I'm the youngest of six, but I'm the only one between me and my mother and my father. So I saw divorce on every level. You know, so we made a commitment that divorce was not an option. I don't come hell and high water. We're going to work it out. We're going to figure it out. And we're going to learn and grow in the process. We're going to redevelop, reimagine, reestablish whatever we need to do. But divorce is not an option for us. I mean, when he went and asked my dad to marry me, my dad was like, yeah, and if it don't work, you know, it's always divorce. I was like, the devil is alive. Like, whose daddy says that? Mine. And so I'm still learning. 24 years in, we're in a different phase of life. We are empty nesters. It's still a relearning. It's still a retooling. It's still a reshaping. And so God is still teaching me how to love him the way he needs to be loved. Because we often want people to love us the way we want to be loved. And that's not necessarily their makeup. There are some things that he's accepted. This is not her DNA. It's not going to happen. And vice versa. But how do we love each other in spite of that? You know, like I teach my daughter now, the 80-20 rule. Honey, you got to make sure that you're not putting the wrong thing in front and making that the 80 when it's only the 20. And so I believe that the Holy Spirit continually helps you guide. The first thing was like, yo, that ain't even an option. They not invited to the wedding. We don't keep friendships. You know, those are, and then he was saying, well, these are the things that I need, and being able to have that communication.
Yeah, the 80-20 rule is a good thing. Yeah, I love these stories, but it feels to me like the only way, because I've been divorced. So it's the only way that I'm going to be able to stay married is by being super duper holy and going into prayer closets and stuff like that. Because I'm going to let you know, I love the Lord because he heard my cry. And I've been in church, you know, all 44 years of life. I'm just not that super duper saved, right? I mean, we're being real. If I can't be real, y'all let me know.
Be real.
Because I'm not super duper backflips and church bro saved, I don't have the bishop's garment. What are the practical ways that Javon, can get married and stay married so I don't go from I do to not? And that 80-20 rule was something that you were getting into. I would love to hear from Lady Akins on that, and then also get Pastor Westbrook's perspective on that as well. Just the 80-20 rule, and then to the Westbrooks, how are some other practical things that us who aren't drinking communion every morning when I wake up in remembrance of him can also save my marriage?
Well, listen, the 80-20 rule, you know, there's 80% that you absolutely love. There's that 20 that gets on your nerves. And what happens in any relationship, whether you're saved or not, a lot of times we magnify the 20 over the 80 so that you can't even see or focus, right? And so that's when you're making that little molehill into a huge mountain. So what thing that we've learned practically, we literally made a T-chart that I think we kept on the back of our closet for over 2 years, meaning the back of the closet door that we had to open the closet. We had to look at it every day. And that T-chart marked out on the one side, what were all the good things about the person? On the other side, what were the things that actually irked our nerves? And it wasn't there to go, look, this is what you do. It was there so I knew this is what I need to work on that's going to help him see that 80 even greater. And whether, you know, I don't always say, you know, I love the Lord, but I don't think it has to be that deep. Now, yes, I understand that God should be the center and the focus, but there are thousands of people that are in happy marriages that are not saved because there has to be a commitment to it. There has to be some accountability to it. When we got married, people didn't tell us that, you know what, you might not like him. You will love him, but you might not like him. So we were like, it wasn't even a year, and we were looking at all these couples that got married around us, and they seemed so happy. And I was like, I can't stand him. I love him, but I can't stand him. He working my nerves. And so we were like, we would always be that true and safe place that people could talk about and put practical steps into place. And you got to be able to communicate. You know, I think we're learning now even another level of honesty That doesn't mean that you have to hurt each other, but I can hear you beyond your words and it's safe with me. I'm not going to hold it over your head, but we're going to work on that. And we're going to work on it together. We're going to establish a plan. And so, no, you might not be in the choir role, but communication is a universal language. And if you can't communicate, then you can't commit. And if you can't commit, you can't stay together.
Let me jump in on that commitment piece. Earlier, Pastor Sam mentioned talking about in love, and we've learned the difference between love and in love. In love is a feeling, and feelings are fickle. Feelings have peaks and valleys, ebbs and flows. However, that's in love, and in love is beautiful. You always want to be in love with your mate. However, if feelings are fickle and have ebbs and flows, then what do, if we build our marriage off in love, then we're in trouble. So we've loved that love is more important. Love is something that we can build on. The Bible says God so loved the world that he gave. So God defines love as an action word. So we are committed to one another. When she tripping or I'm tripping, we're still committed. Whether I'm feeling high or feeling low, we're still committed. It doesn't matter where we feel, how we feel in our relationship. Right. We're committed to one another. And there, and as Lady Akins mentioned, there are millions of people who are very committed to a lot of things that's not necessarily Christian. Mm-hmm. So it's the level of commitment is where we're focused on. Mm-hmm. I'm committed to the act of loving her. I'm committed to the act of serving her. I'm committed to the act of being only with her. So I don't care if she ain't feeling me or I ain't feeling her or how fine somebody else may be. Fine ain't got to do with it. And fine ain't nothing got, has nothing to do with my level of commitment to my wife. And that's where it is. And again, I don't think you have to be Christian to be committed. You can be committed to whatever you want to be. You can be committed to not loving the Bible. That's a commitment. But if you're committed to one another, like we're committed to one another, that's where it's at. So we're more focused on the act of love. Yes, we're focused on being in love and we work to stay in love and we work to make our love mature and the act of love be better. However, wherever we are in our in love, we're more so committed to the act of love. God so loved that he gave. Mm-hmm. So I'm committed to giving her my life to her. Mm-hmm. I'm committed to giving my time to her. Mm-hmm. I'm committed to giving my service to her. I'm committed to giving everything I can in my life to her. That's our level of commitment.
Absolutely. I was also tell Javon that it's commitment and the power of agreement. We teach that the power of agreement. The husband and the wife, the man and the woman have to come into agreement about everything. Finances, how you're going to rear the children, this with the children. Who going to check the in-laws when they get out of line? You know, where, how are we going to spend our money? Where are we going for holidays? Where are we going to church? Are we not going to church? Agreement. Mm-hmm. There is power in agreement. So that goes along with commitment and communication. What do you agree on? What do you disagree on? But come into agreement, not so much compromise, because mm-hmm. a lot of times we compromise, people lose out, in my opinion. Agreement is more powerful than compromise. So there is power in agreement.
Yeah, and I just wanted to add on this, because with all you're saying with the 80-20, and he was really, Javon, you talked about what would for you and for singles, you have to find a friend before you find anything. And I think that when you talk agreement, you talk about communication. We're friends. Like, we're really friends. We really are friends. Like, we work together. We go home together. We cook together. But we're friends. Before we are, I want to say before even the marriage aspect of it, we were 10 years of friendship. And so if you're single, you're looking, how do you find that right thing? You got to find a friend first before you find a lover, because we like the lover part, and that's always what messes up. You want to love, get in that love, and you want to do it and screw it and get all that first. The problem is y'all ain't really friends. And so if you get the friendship right, then guess what? Even when the lovemaking ain't right, you so good of friends, because it was 3 months. We ain't even do it because we didn't like each other, but we was friends and we was able to be in relationship, and that was the 80-20. Now, we got out of that. That was a long time ago. But the fact of the matter is, because we were friends, we were able to go through that storm.
I think that's so powerful, Pastor Akins, because a lot of times we give our friends honesty and we give them grace that we don't necessarily give to our spouses. You know your friend two-faced. You know they steal, they lie every day and three times on Sunday.
You know you can't leave stuff out
in public with them. You can't leave your wallet around or your phone. They gonna talk to your girl and your guy. It don't matter. We know this about our friends, yet their history makes us still stay in communion with them, in community with them. So I believe that friendship piece is so essential. It's vital. You can't have a healthy marriage without having a solid friendship.
It was my friendship with her. But before God gave me this level of discipline, it was my friendship for her that kept me clean, to be honest. When I first started dating her and coming from some of the things that I was doing prior to our relationship, it was my friendship for her that kept me disciplined. Like, no, I'm not doing my friend like that. No, no, I'm not doing that because that's my friend. It was my friendship for her, my love and love and respect for this woman before she became my wife, before she became my lover, before she became all those other great things. It was my love and respect for my friend that allowed me to operate in a level of discipline until God got me disciplined enough that I could handle the stuff that would come with being married. So that part about friends is critical. It really and is. I used to joke with her all the time that she's my best friend, but she had a friend. She had a best friend, but she's my best friend. But it's that friendship piece is it. We talked about it. I think before the day of our wedding, all of the people who were in our wedding just all left. And here's the night before our wedding, and we hanging out together because we ain't really got no friends to hang out with, you know.
But I think God was, even in that moment, even in that, he was trying to allow us to see just in real time that how this was going to take friendship.
Yeah.
What God had designed for our marriage and for our lives, friendship was going to have to be at the forefront of this relationship. It really is. I'm telling you.
I actually like her.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I like her. Because most marriages, and I won't put a number on it, I want to say 80%, they're not good friends. And most relationships, they don't nurture the friendship part. And so when everything else start breaking down, and let me just say this, let me put it out there, because most people in marriages can't be real honest with the person they're married with. And because of that, that's where marriages break down, where I can't tell you, look, I like it freaky. If you can't get me freaky, then we got a problem. Or, you know, oh, I like it this way. Oh, why are you looking at that? Because this is what I like. I'm sorry you caught me. Let me tell you what I like. But most people, and it starts with friendship and honesty that allows me to be naked with you. We don't have enough naked marriages. We don't have enough naked relationships, naked friendships. When I'm naked with my friends, you got to be naked with the person that you want to be in relationship with. If you could get naked there, you got someone to keep.
Yeah,
absolutely. Let me say this as well. You talked about being naked and being honest. A lot of times, and we counsel and got a lot of couples, and the women oftentimes say, I want him to tell me the truth, but can you handle the truth though?
Are you a soft place to land?
We have to be, as women, I'm speaking specifically to women, we have to be a soft place to land. Yes, you want the truth, but are you going to tear the club up, tear the house up, tear the church up when he gives you the truth? We have to be a soft place to land and be ready to receive the truth.
You have to be able to operate in a level of grace, the same grace that you want. You have to be able to extend to them. I used to tell him all the time, you're not vulnerable enough. And then I had to go back and apologize and say, I wasn't vulnerable enough to make you feel you could be vulnerable, you know, and that plays a big part. And so when you get the truth, being able sometimes, and it's funny, we were just talking a couple weeks ago and I was like, I'm not responding because I'm receiving what you're saying. And I'm processing what you're saying because I want it to be safe and I don't want a reaction. Because the Lord was like, just be quiet and listen. And I know as women, we always want to give a reaction to it, but you'll get more and go a lot further if you learn how to be that safe place to land. Doesn't mean that you don't have the crucial conversations, but you'll be guided in how to have that conversation where it doesn't destroy you. And we made an agreement, even when we have tough conversations, that conversation doesn't rule the rest of the day.
Right.
Oh, that's good.
That's right. Good.
You know, it's that moment. We set a time frame. And then when we get up, all right, babe, what you want to do now? Absolutely. It doesn't rule the rest of our day.
Yeah.
That's good. I like you brought something up that I really want to jump in here on. You mentioned how you had to make an adjustment. And that was one of the biggest shifts in our relationship. When I realized, watch this, Pastor, I was the problem. I was the problem. So in this relationship, you know, she's very strong, very opinionated. and all those things. And I'm sitting back like we were, I used to say that we were like Shaq and Kobe. We're both alpha type A personalities. And I'm like, I can talk. So you ain't gonna talk over me. You ain't gonna do me like you do them other dudes. Da, 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 da. And then in my prayer time, God, fix her. She talked too much. She did. She that. Lord, fix her. Now you said this with my wife. Now you got to make sure she right. Fix her. And God, one day he interrupted my prayer. I'm like, okay, but when you want me to fix you? When you want me to fix you? Because what she is what she is. Why you got to react to it? Do you have to be? What is it about? Is it her or is it your ego that you got to be right every time something is said?
But what if when you are right when every time something is said? What if you are just always right?
Yeah, but here's what I've learned: being right ain't always what's right for the moment.
Mm. Right.
So what I'm right? So what
That's
I'm right?
Good question.
So what I'm right, but so if I'm right and I call and I didn't call hell and high water happen because I want to be right, then I still lost.
That's right.
Right? Because yeah. I want bigger things in my life and in my marriage than to just be right.
Come on.
Mm. I had to check me. God checked me, and then I had to do the work.
Yeah.
Sometimes with all your knowledge, shut up.
Mm. With your small self.
With my small self. With my able to converse self. Shut up.
Good.
That's the truth.
That's good.
Right.
So being right at the wrong time. That's the thing.
Yeah. I had to
just
check.
Right at the wrong time.
Right.
Yeah. I had to God checked me, and then I had to keep doing that. It's not about Job once said this. Job was like, look, everybody was throwing their stuff over the thing. Jonah was everybody throwing all their stuff over the stuff over the off the boat, and Jonah was like, man, y'all keep y'all stuff, man. It ain't y'all. It's me. I was the problem because I need to be right. I need to have it the Westbrook way. The way I cook is the way I want to be cooked is the way it should be cooked. Like all of those things. It was me because I had grown up selfishly and I brought that stuff into my marriage.
And I guess that's part of my second topic about she thinks she's my mama. So it's not even really about her correcting you, it's about the way that you receive the correction. Because even then, when you were telling the story and she jumped in, it's Jonah, baby. There's a way of the correction, and then you could have been like, baby, I'm telling the story, but you know, on live with everybody watching. But it was like, yeah, thank you. And then you went on about it. So it's about, I guess, the way that correction is received as well.
That's a good point, that's a great observation. Because that's maturity. I do have a strong personality. I was born this way. It's nothing I prayed for, nothing I asked for. This is just me, right? So I had to learn. I am not this man's mama. I'm not his boss because I owned a business. He was like, you keep that at work, baby. You know, I was very independent. I could, at the start of our marriage, I could buy my own car, pay my own bills. And he once told me something that I have to repeat even here. He said, independent women need to stay single. If you're so independent, then you might not need me.
Come on, ma'am.
He got me all the way together. Do you hear me? I'm like, wait a minute. No, I ain't saying I don't need you now.
Right.
He said I don't need it. That ain't what I'm saying.
But you're acting like
But I was acting like
yeah,
it.
Yeah.
Even then, even that moment that you just pointed out, I've learned to be soft. It's Jonah versus you wrong. It's Jonah. You see the difference? I conveyed the same information, but my tone and my heart posture has softened.
But not only that, my willingness to hear her correction, my willingness to hear her opinion has changed. Where I value my intellect. I don't know. I respected her for being that, but I don't think I valued it. I had to learn to value her voice.
Yeah.
Value her intellect. Value her love enough for me to say, okay, I love you, but you could have done that better.
Mm-hmm.
I'll ask her a question after I'm done preaching, because I know she's gonna tell me the truth. Everybody else is gonna be like, Pastor, you bless me. Yeah, they lying. A lot of them be lying. You know, because they don't know how to respond to a preacher. So they just always give you the, ooh, Pastor, you bless me. She going to tell me the truth, though. Like, that was good, but in this point here, I just thought, I ain't get that. She going to give me the truth, what most people want. And I've learned to respect that and honor that voice. So when she does say something, I know where it comes from. And I'm mature enough to receive it.
The more I listen to y'all, the more I realize that I got married way young. So let me tell y'all this. I was a praise and worship leader and choir director at my church. And my wife, ex-wife now, wife at the time, was one of my section leaders. So she was in the choir and she, you know, beautiful, nice voice. But she was opinionated. So we would be in choir rehearsal and she'd be giving opinions. We'd be getting ready for church Sunday morning, giving opinions. On the way to church, giving opinions. While I'm directing the song, giving opinions. At the church, giving opinions. And what I'm hearing you saying is it was my fault for not being mature enough to receive all these opinions instead of what I believed then and what I'm going to go ahead and admit to still believing now. She was given too many opinions. Shut up!
Two things can be true.
And you know, so I want to know, Pastor Akins, I'm tearing up because I'm so emotional because I'm still hearing her opinions in my ear right now. My question, Pastor Akins, is what did you do to prepare yourself to hear Lady Akins' voice when she's giving her opinions so that maybe, because I know what Pastor Westbrook is going to say. He's going to say, go to God and pray and find my closet. And I don't got a closet that I want to go to because I just want her to stop giving me about the part on Total Praise. I know what the part does, Felicia. So, Pastor Akins, what did
you tell Felicia back?
Prepare yourself to be able to receive all of the opinions that were being presented to you. I feel better now. Therapy, Lord.
Well, yeah, you got that off your chest. So I think it was different for me because my mom was extremely strong. I raised still a single. My mom is still very strong. So it developed something in me that I had to identify. She helped me identify, and I had to be able to adjust to. And she had to be able to adjust to because growing up with a strong mom, I became even stronger, emboldened. So when I make a decision, my decision had to have a lot behind it, and I had to be able to back it up. And so it created a little librato in me, a little, you know, lion in me. So even though she was strong, I'd come stronger. I had to learn the balance of being able to hear her voice. Because if she says something that was contrary, not only am I going to prove you wrong, but I'm going to back it up with three or four different things. And it created something. Now, I need you to know, we have never had an argument ever in our marriage. I've never raised my voice at her. She's never raised her voice at me. We've never had a tone.
I'm sorry. I'm going to let you finish.
No, it's the truth. We don't. That was one thing we committed to. Now, when we first got married, I tried it.
You should. You should test that theory.
You can't argue by yourself.
If they're crazy.
Right.
So wait. So,
We have crucial conversations.
Okay, so y'all argue. We okay, do. Good. Y'all do argue. Okay.
We don't argue. We have strong disagreements, but we have learned time and tone. So even now, if we're having an intense conversation, I will pause because I know I can't raise my voice. Ooh. Now I can be blunt and he will give me that space. Okay, say what you need to say. So, and if you need to fix it or correct it, after it comes out your mouth, it didn't come out right, and vice versa, then we'll adjust it. But it was important to us that we respected each other enough that I didn't do that screaming and hollering, and he wasn't doing it to me either. We've never called each other out our names at all. And now because we super deep, it was just something we committed to.
No, that's super deep. It's super deep. We're not going to...
No, but she had to learn how to talk to me too. And I was getting to that she had to learn how, because if you said something the wrong way, then I'm going to prove you wrong, and it created a problem. So if she wanted to correct my sermon, if she wanted to correct something, she had to say it in a way. And basically it was like, can I offer some advice or can I?
She had to know how to rephrase.
She had to rephrase what she was saying, because to me, I was not really acceptant of that mama stuff because my mom was strong. So when I stood on a whole different platform that I had to learn how to come down, because she is the Holy Ghost to some of my stuff that I need to be able to hear.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Because his mother was so strong, his mother was very, no, that can't happen. That so I had to learn how to present it in a way that even if I felt it should be a no, I had to learn how to present it in a way to say, well, babe, did you think about this, this, and this? You know, and then he'll go, oh, I didn't look at that. Or no, you know, down to even some things we do at the church. I'm like, well, did you want to, how much did you want to spend? Because these are the options, you know, yeah. As opposed to saying, no, we can't do that. That's too much out the budget.
Yeah.
You know? So I had to learn how to rephrase it.
What about those women that be like, no, I'm just keeping it real. I'm just telling them how it, whatever that used to be.
The 90s.
And they should stay single.
But here's the thing, though, because I've heard the argument that some women will say that if he can't handle me just giving my opinion, then maybe we shouldn't be together. Instead of the internal shift of I need to maybe just change the way that I say it. So can you speak to those women? And then let me tag Felicia in the comments while you do.
So that is that's part of maturing, period. You know, I'm a very independent. I was, you know, I lived on my own. I took care of myself before we ever got married. So when we got married, there were things that I was used to paying bills. He wasn't.
I ain't paying no bills.
So when
I went to pass, I don't pay no bills either. I'm sorry, so lady.
I transferred the bills, you know, and he started paying bills. Well, let me back up. I would literally be like, there's $10 missing out of the account. What did you do? Well, not knowing that because I was a business teacher and all of that, I was so organized, I was emasculating him. Unbeknownst, it wasn't intentional.
They do that sometimes, do they?
Well, I wasn't having that.
But it wasn't a real conversation that I understood that. And so to the women that think, I just want to keep it real, understand that sometimes you're keeping it real. It's just you being rude and you don't want to mature to learn how to have a real conversation so that you're not offensive and causing a bigger wedge, because somebody told you that's the way that we're supposed to be and that being submissive is a bad word. Being submissive is not a bad word at all. I get more with honey than I do if I pour vinegar.
Yes.
And so we have grown up that, you know, especially as a African American woman, we've had to do it all. We had to prove ourselves. But when I come home, that should be the place that I could be like, you know, babe, I love you taking care of me. I'm so grateful you take out the trash and I don't have to do it. I'm so glad that you go put gas in the car. I don't have to do it. So right. What do you need? You know, we think that that's being strong. Well, that's not really being strong. That's using defense mechanisms that you had to use out in the world, and you think that's going to fly in your marriage. Well, it can, but you're going to have a toxic marriage. Mm-hmm. And we're not looking for toxicity. We're looking for wholeness.
That's good. I'm done.
Yeah, this is so good. A lot of times, because women have had to be so strong, we've had to be single mothers and get it on our own, get it out the mud, grind. We take those same traits into marriages and they do not work. Right, we look at it as a badge of honor to be. I can pay my own bills, yeah, but I'm just being honest. Now my husband pays all the bills. I like you better here. I like you better here. Like seriously, all that independent and strong black woman I'm gonna do it by myself has no place in a marriage. If you can do it by yourself, then do it by yourself.
And what I've learned with most men have to fight the world and fight every day of their lives. Fight because we're just black. We have to fight so much that we're not willing to fight for the kingdom in our own home. I'm not willing to fight to be the king in my own house. I refuse to do so. And so I think those things tend to happen. And I think what happens is if you're rooted in being that way, he may not fight you. You may win all that stuff and you get the way you get it and you can run the house and get all the stuff you want to go on, get girl trips and shopping sprees and all that good stuff. And as good as you look, you're going to find him next door with the girl who looks 10 times worse than you, but she knows how to treat him. She knows how to speak to him. She knows how to make him feel like a king and honor him. People, where they're not honored, they won't be long.
Ooh.
When you do not feel honored, you will not be there long. Mm-hmm. It's about honor, right? And not only is she my wife, I want to honor her and I want to be honored. And one of the things that we had to learn in our relationship is that this is our relationship. It ain't your anniversary. It's our anniversary. It's Valentine's Day for me, just like it's Valentine's Day for you.
Absolutely.
So when you want to come home to a bubble bath and roses and balloons, how you think I want to come home sometimes?
Mm.
Yeah. I want you to consider me the way you want me to consider you.
Absolutely.
And we honor that with one another. We're trying to outserve one another. I don't want to give her a reason to dip off.
Right. And I think I remember going and being in my marriage and her saying, you know, you're patient with everybody else when they're giving you opinions and when they're doing this, when they're doing that. Why aren't you that way with me? And I could understand a little bit of that perspective, but it was also the fact that they weren't giving it to me 24. Okay. I'm sorry, 12 hours a day. I didn't want to be over embellishing and saying 24, just 12 hours a day. I wasn't getting advice from them. But I think it was also the way that they were presenting it. So I definitely, I get that. But we know that it's not always about the man feeling like she's acting like my mama. There's also moments where maybe the woman will say something to the fact of, you're not my dad. But it's not just the you can't tell me what to do type of situation. It's also the how does a man, or I want to make sure I'm asking this question in the best way that I can, because, you know, I'm the one doing the interview and I'm asking the question. When the woman has expectations based off of what she's been accustomed to, and the woman's comparing then the husband to those expectations. So I want to ask, starting with Pastor Westbrook, when you were finding a man, how did you or do you compare that man to the male figures that you had? And was there a point to where you were like, okay, I need him to be like this. And if he's not being like this, then I need to correct him to be like this.
No, sir. That really wasn't a struggle of mine. Like I said, I did not want the pastor. I did not want the preacher. I did not want what I had seen, if I can be completely transparent. I did not want that. I wanted kind of the opposite in most instances. I think the only thing that I brought into the marriage was I don't pump gas. I didn't pump gas. My dad pumped out gas. And I'm like, I'm not touching this. He said, look, if you about to run out, you better stop at the gas station. Now, he takes care of it most of the time, but don't run out waiting on it, though. You know what I'm saying? So I really didn't struggle with comparing him to the male figures who were in my life. That wasn't my struggle, if I can be completely honest.
I got you. And I think I still kind of hear it a little bit, even in the answer about the gas, though. So I think that there is a part of the answer that I'm trying to get to.
Okay.
So if he said, you know what, I don't pump gas, you need to pump the gas yourself. And you're saying, my daddy pumped my gas, you need to pump my gas. Yeah. Doesn't that kind of fall in line with that? And how do you get past him not doing those things that your daddy did?
Well, that's only one thing, I guess, and he does it. So, but I get what you're trying to get at, but what if he didn't, right? It's kind of like his mom was an amazing cook. When we first started dating, I couldn't cook eggs, nothing. He taught me how to cook. He said, look, you're a cute girl. I love you. But I was born in the 70s. I don't eat out. You're going to have to eat out like that. You're going to have to know how to cook. That was a prereq before we got married. He taught me how to cook, right? But I can't do it like his mama. So I think that's where the agreement is. Yes, I'm going to do it. I'm going to put forth an effort. But I ain't your mama, though. Just like he can't be my dad.
I get that point. Lady Akins, did you ever come across that with your husband saying, you know, I have this expectation of you, this is where you need to be?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. You know, and now 24 years in, there's some things that are still not me. But we have made our own workarounds. Why are you smiling like that?
I want to get the answer, that's all.
We made, you know, he's like, okay, if you're not going to do that, then let's work on a solution to get it done, as long as it gets done. So, we, again, the 80 and the 20 was most prevalent, you know, and was most important. So, yeah, so there were some things, you know, I am not his mama. She is very meticulous about some things that I'm just not doing, you know. And so I can remember early on, like when we first got married, she used to come and walk through my entire house every time she came over. And I was like, yo, am I under inspection?
Not all the way through
that. Yes, she did.
Yes, please continue on. What were you saying, Pastor Akins? Your mama didn't do what?
She didn't walk through the whole house. I think
with
that's a little
exception. With the exception of my bedroom.
Yes, not the bedroom. She like maybe walked around.
Again, if we only go in the living room, you didn't have to go everywhere else.
Well, things were, you know, she knows how I want them. So she was going around like, you know.
You hear it, right?
like kind of like putting things in order.
You hear it?
Let me go to a point that I put in the chat.
No.
Real and transparent, right? And so, and I love her. Don't get me wrong, I do. But there are things that we are still working out, you know, that he wants certain ways, and there's things that I want certain ways, you know. I've never said you're not my daddy. However, I have said I don't need you to preach to me, you know. And I guess you would say that that sort of was like when my dad would give those kind of speeches. So I used to be like, don't preach to me. Let's have a conversation. I don't need a sermon on this, you know. The one thing I admire is I never had to worry about if he had a hustle. Or if he was, and I say hustle because when we first got married, when we had our daughter, he had lost his job. I was a school teacher. And when I came home, he stayed with her, I think, for the first 5 months. And then when I came home and it was nice enough, he was like, okay, yeah, I'm, you know, taking the last step we have. I'm buying this truck and I'm starting the lawn care business. And so one thing, he always has been a provider. He's never been one that's going to sit home and just not do. So where my dad would say, okay, I need an honesty check, I could always say, no, my husband has. I didn't have to go to my dad and say, daddy, can you loan us money? Because my husband was always going to find a way to get it done legally, get it done. And so I never had to do those attributes, you know, in that sense.
That's good. That's good. And I did cut you off, Pastor Akins. What were you going to say? I just wanted to make sure that I try to inflame that more and show that there is nothing in this world that's going to tear this up at all.
Yeah. No, I was going to add, and I kind of put it in there, that marriage normally fails for two reasons. High expectations and limited training, or you're not prepared and you don't prepare yourself for it. And so when it comes to this daddy, mama type of thing, ultimately, it's about expectations. And you have to be able to be real enough with what those expectations are and to be able to adjust them. Now, once I realized that, okay, she's not going to be my mama, I had to adjust some expectations. And let me say this in a very plain sense. Oftentimes, you're looking for someone that, if your parent is good, your mama good, your dad good, you're looking for someone, whether it's unconscious or consciously, you're looking for someone that's there or better than your parent. If you're not, maybe you didn't have a good parent, but you know that's ultimately what you're looking for unconsciously. Yep. So the expectations I had placed on her were unfair because my mom is a totally different breed. Raised me when she had me when she was 16 years old. She's a whole different cut. And because of that, I can't put those expectations on her and vice versa. You know, her dad was a financial guy. He went to the same job every day. I'm an entrepreneur from the beginning. She met me. Now she's an entrepreneur. She was a school teacher. Now she couldn't imagine teaching school because she's a business. Her mind is business. But before she went, you got to go get that steady paycheck. I'm like, no, we're going to make that steady paycheck and we're going to make it happen. And I shifted her a little bit out of the expectation that everything had to be an accountant-like experience. Let's make it happen. So
That's good. That's good. Did you have any follow-up to that, the Westbrooks?
No.
just wanted to make sure I didn't leave any meat on the bones. So my last question, the way we're going to end this is, I'm going to ask the Akins one question and the Westbrooks a different question, so different aspects of it. From the Westbrooks perspective, as someone who also came from divorce and you all remarried, I'm divorced and single, what's the bit of advice that you would give for, and we talked a little bit about this, but I want to just dive into it just one more quick moment. As a single divorcee trying to go and thinking about getting married again, what advice would you give for my preparation and to make sure that I guess ready? How does one know when they're ready to get back into it? And you know what? I'm gonna, since I ask long-winded questions, I'm gonna try to make this as simple as possible. I don't know if I ever want to get married again. And if I do get married, I know that divorce is an option. So, you know, let's try it. Well, maybe if the next one don't work out, then Mrs. Martin number 4 might be the one. What advice do you have for me?
Okay. Don't look for it. Be found serving God somewhere. All right. Be found operating in purpose. What's your purpose for living? Maybe right now your season is not to be married. And so what is your season? What is your the season of preparation? Is it preparation for your purpose? Trying to figure out who you are, trying to unpack some of the things that you contribute to for the demise of your marriage, right? What things in you can be better? Even if you're wrong, there's something God, if you've been wronged, there's something God is trying to communicate to you, right? In everything, there is a lesson, right? Retrieve the lesson from the time that you were in, right? Mm-hmm. What is it about you that could have been better? What is it about you that could be different? What is it about you that can grow from the space that you were in? And then and make that your season of preparation. Maybe you never get married again, but maybe it caused you to be a better person. Because I think in trying to go into a better space with bitterness, they don't really coexist well, right? So moving into your better, get rid of every bit of baggage that you had, mm-hmm. right? Unpack That's some good. Of the stuff that you, maybe the reason why you couldn't receive some of her opinion. Maybe it was abundance of it. Maybe you just had a short fuse.
It was
too.
A lot. It was a lot, Pastor.
I believe you.
You right? should wear that red shirt during that interview.
Right.
Okay, I'm gonna wear the red shirt again.
So you know what I mean? Like so. Yeah. What is it about you that could be better? And so moving into whatever God is taking you to, whether it's just your career or whatever. Maybe it's not about marriage. Maybe it's just being a better you.
Yeah, and I also say, understand that one is a whole number. You're not looking for someone to complete you. Only God can do that. We're looking for people to compliment us. Yeah. Also heal. A lot of times we go from relationship to relationship and we're not healed. We're still broken, looking for the person to mend our broken pieces. Heal so we can pick better. Because we talk about how bad the ex was, but you chose them. You said I do.
So maybe you didn't hear God, yeah. right? And so if we say hurt people, I want to argue that healed people heal people.
Yeah, that's good.
That's real good word. That's real good word. Akins family, Pastor Akins and Lady Akins, for those who are in a marriage right now and they're going through a rough time and they're thinking about, you know what? We said I do, but divorce? It is right there. It's only going to cost $250. It's only $50 if you're on government assistance. Why should they stay married?
You know, I think it's several reasons. One, you need, let me just give this advice. Get help. You know, sometimes you need a rescue. Sometimes you need someone else to hear the story. And a third party is a good entry point to begin to talk through, because generally, and I think Pastor Westbrook said it, generally it's you that's the problem, not her. And generally it's she's the problem, not, and you have to deal with, and vice versa, right? You have to deal with yourself in a marriage that ultimately will allow you to heal and kind of go to the next level and where you think you're headed to. But if I had to give a reason why, I tell you what, you're better together. And I don't know where you are in your process, but it's cheaper to keep her. I don't know where it is from a standpoint of you navigating through life. But if you figure out, if that's your friend, you'll be best with that friendship navigating through the storms. And I found out, this is just us, 20-something years, when you get through every stormy place in your marriage, the marriage gets stronger if you got through with God.
Right. Well, listen, I say he don't want to give up that favor. The Bible says he that findeth a wife findeth favor. Okay. And I'm his favor. All right. And so you don't want to risk that. But I do believe in getting counseling. I do believe in working through it. Now, as long as somebody ain't beating your brains in, I'm not telling you, you know, right. we just talking about regular marital disagreements. Right. You know, there are going to be disagreements. There are going to be high times and low times. But if you can wave out the storm, you know, you got to keep your eyes focused on the end goal. You know, I know our end goal, leaving a legacy to our children, making sure they understand healthy marriage, making sure they understand how to communicate, making sure that I'm leaving stuff for my children's children. It's an end goal. And the enemy's job is he wants to destroy and cut off and abort what's yet to come through your relationship. And so that means my daughter would have daddy issues because my daddy was with my mama all this time. And then he left her. And then my son is like, well, I really don't need a woman because it didn't work out for my daddy. So it's a bigger picture. You know, my destiny and my purpose is tied up in this. Right. And I love God way too much to allow the enemy to win over stuff that can be trivial. It don't matter if it's not trivial to the rest of the world. It's trivial to us. Mm. And it's worth pressing through. So I don't know who you are, but get some help. Get with some people that have wisdom and stop relying on your single friends who ain't never been married in the first place.
Or the ones that were in bitter relationships.
Right.
So this has been amazing. This has been absolutely fantastic. Before I let you guys go, I've got two quick questions. Number one, we do this after party, this after session, if you will, on Instagram afterwards. Is there any chance that both couples, that you all will be available for about 10 minutes tops on Instagram, just so we can kind of recap, unpack some of the stuff that we've talked about today and make sure people are watching this later on? Do you all have 10 minutes when we end to go to Instagram and just unpack?
Sure, good.
All right, so I will start the Instagram and then I will tag you both on, and then we'll just kind of, because there's some questions that I have. Oh, Pastor Akins, I got a question for you, but I'm not going to ask it here. I'm going to ask it there. Instagram after dark. We're not going to do it here. But I got a question. Oh, I got a question.
After dark.
That's where I'm going, because I got a question. But before we go, before we leave this space, I'm going to start with the Akins. Can you please let us know where we can find you, how we can get in touch with you, and what you have going on right now with your ministry?
So you can find us here on Facebook at Triumphant Life AP, I believe is the handle. And you can find us on YouTube at Triumphant Life, or you can go to our website, triumphantlifenj.org. We are in a project right now called Uganda Matters, where we are building a school. We support 110 orphan children in Uganda at the Good Samaritan Mercy Center in Mbarra, Uganda. We built a orphanage for them last year. Well, 2020 that we completed. And now we are completing the school. The awesome thing about it is Pastor Johnson, who supports these children, he's able to reach others that are now coming. So Muslims, children are now coming to this Christian school, and we want to affect their lives. These children have been abandoned because in Uganda, when you have a child out of wedlock, you either decide to stay with your family or abandon your children. So he's literally rescued these children out of the gutters of the streets of Mbarra, and they are the happiest children. We had the pleasure to actually be there with them, hands on the ground. And so that's what we're doing right now. You can go to our website, click on Uganda Matters. You can donate, and all of the proceeds that are given actually go to help us finish the school in Uganda. So that's our main focus right now in this season.
And you can find us at Lydell Akins and Coach Tracy Akins.
Yes.
At Instagram and Facebook.
Tracy Akins on Facebook.
Absolutely. Excellent. And the West Brooks.
So just last night, we released our first episode of Marriage Maintenance with the West Brooks. It's a podcast on Redemption Church on YouTube. You can find us. Somebody put this in the chat at www.marriagemaintain.com. Listen, with the West Brooks, we talk about everything from the bedroom to the bank account. We're really out here trying to help marriages be strong and healthy. How can you find us at All Things Samantha Westbrook? At I Am Pastor Devin on IG. We both are on Facebook as well. We have so many awesome things going. Matter of fact, tomorrow we're doing ministry maintenance. We're helping five ministry couples strengthen their ministries right here in the city. We have some people that's coming from out of town to even be in Memphis with us. We're giving away strategy, resources.
Things that we didn't have.
Our church is blowing up. And I know it's the hand of God, the grace of God, but there are some strategies that we're giving out. He always says, if 500 new people showed up to your church today, could you handle them? Most people can't. So we're giving away strategy as an act of love right here in the city of Memphis on tomorrow. We are the pastors of Redemption Church, the most dope indoctrinal church in our region, downtown Memphis. Check us out. We are the West Brooks.
Yes, they are the West Brooks and not just the Brooks. So get it right. Huh?
Get it right.
So this has been amazing. This has been powerful. This has been necessary and needed. So thank you all. Thank you, the Akins. Thank you, the West Brooks, for coming on and just trying to help us get better and be better in our marriage and our relationships. That's what we have today. So this has been the Javon Show. I've been your host, Javon. We have had an amazing time. Shout out to our executive producer, Dr. T.L. Holmes, Dr. Anisha Thompson of Elevate Magazine, to our entire team, Lanisha Lowe, Marquise Jelts, to the greatest social media person in the planet, Mariella, thank you all so much for helping with today's show. We are about to go to Instagram, so go over there right now because I've got questions from the bedroom to the bank account. I've got questions, and we're going to go over there to answer them. So until next time, take care of yourselves and each other. We are gone. A little bit
crazy. I'm just saying, your mama is so beautiful.
Thank you.
Oh, she is.
And I will make a great stepfather because I raised my kids well, right? And
I'm in need of a stepdad.
You are in need of a stepdad. I'm in need of one too, but you might not.
You really need a stepdad, Leah.
I do. Okay. Anyways, that's enough. We gotta take over the tomorrow. Get a little bit crazy.
But I can tell you this.
Tell him.
I'm talking to you. Your platform will expand. The step that you made on faith was a complete one. And there were people who actually advised you against it. And they made you feel totally crazy and asinine for stepping out on faith. But God said, because you stepped out on the water, Peter, Jesus said, I'm going to meet you there. And those who are expecting you to sink, tell them they in for a rude awakening. I also see sponsors. Yeah, they're coming. God. I say go to sleep at night because you go to sleep stressed, tossing and turning like, oh my God, is it going to work? Did I make the right decision? Blah, 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 blah. God said, go to sleep. I got you. So he's going to give you strength in your body and he's going to give you innovative ideas for your platform to the point where you won't have to find people. People going to come finding you. Now I'm done with that.
Goose, my body is shivering right now. I got goosebumps. And I play a lot. I'm not playing about this one. Staying up all night and worry, check. People telling me that I'm crazy, check. Meeting the sponsors, check. Just a burden that lifted off of my chest and shoulders. So bless you, Dr. Christina.
I'm told by many individuals on my team that this is ridiculous, that I need to get this fully together, that I need to get this right. So what better place for a black man to go get a haircut than Sports Clip? Oh, making me go to the bowl. He looked at this head and said, no, sir. No, sir. No, sir.
Mighty, mighty guy in that Sports Clip.